This is a story that might seem like something you hear on a podcast, like something Joe Rogan would be talking about, but it's actual medicine, it's actual science, and it's something that has been helping veterans in Connecticut for some time now, and it was just recently expanded by the General Assembly. I'm talking about the psilocybin mushroom program that, multiple veterans, I think about 20 veterans have been in a supervised study with this for the last year or so. It has shown serious abilities to combat depression, as well as a variety of mental health issues, even addiction issues. And now lawmakers want to expand who's eligible for it. This would include not only veterans now, but first responders, EMTs, frontline healthcare workers. And to learn a little bit more about the science and about the medical benefits, I've got Dr. Craig Allen from Hartford Healthcare here to talk with me again. Dr. Allen, we spoke last year about this, and the program seems to be catching fire. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, the more information, the more data we get, the more comfortable we can feel with this. And the data is really good. It's very positive, very exciting.
Well, you know what? The more comfortable we can feel with this is, I think, very well said by you just now. Talk to me about, how you overcome the stigma, right? It's mushrooms. It's magic mushrooms, man. It's a drug. Like, people, talk to me about the medical benefits that we've seen just so far in the limited studies with veterans.
Well, it's really fascinating to look at how this molecule affects the brain and affects different parts of the brain. So that's something that's worth talking about, at least in my world.
Man.
But what you see right there in front of you with patients who've had this experience is really significant, profound changes in the meaning that they see in the world, the way they think about how they fit into the world, how they process their emotions and the perspective that they have about themselves and about others. It's really striking when some of the first person case reports of patients who've had this experience. And this is with people who have not done very well in traditional treatments, with traditional medications, with traditional psychotherapy. But through this program, and remember, an important component of this is it's not just a magic molecule. And you say mushroom, whether it's from the mushroom or it's or at some point where producing the active psilocin component of psilocybin. It right now, all of these studies involve therapy as well. So the therapy is directly connected to the good outcomes that we see, and that is preparing the person for the experience, being there when they're administered this medication, and then processing what happened and what went on afterwards. And that's where we see the really strong, and it looks like some of the effects sustained for quite a while.
I'm glad you corrected me too, because of course I say mushroom and I'm part of the problem. I'm part of the stigma because that's where I recognize it from. That's how I think about this molecule, psilocybin, as you correctly called it just a second ago. You spoke, and we spoke about this last year too, how it's helpful with people who have treatment-resistant depression, people for whom SSRIs are not doing it, for whom the other, you would know the variety of different depression treatments and medication far better than I would. But so talk to me about what does that treatment look like? You said a little bit already, these people take a dose, an injection, I don't even know what you call it, and then do that in concert with a therapist. Is that person in the room during their entire, for lack of a better word, trip?
Yeah, so how it would work, and right now, this is only available through treatment protocols, and, this is a technicality, but it's a reality. Anybody that is accepted into one of these studies, they have to go through what is called an institutional review board. They have to be screened for any co-occurring psychiatric or other psychosocial issues that might interfere with the treatment. It's all research-based right now, but we're seeing the outcomes and we're moving along. So there's a preparation phase. So the person that is accepted into the study, they've cleared the IRB review board, they meet with a therapist and they talk about what's going to happen, where's it going to happen, how will they receive their dose, what they might experience, and then they're either brought back or that occurs, you know, prior to the dosing of the medication. And the dosing is usually once. In some protocols, it's twice over the course of a number of weeks, but it's often just one dose. Yes, the therapist, usually there's two that are there, at least a therapist and then
two therapists in the room. Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah. Yep.
And yeah, the medication is administered. It's an oral medication. And the person's often, they're in a specialized room. There's calm vibes. They could be reclining in a chair or even on a couch, and they take this medication. And the whole time there are staff members there, professional therapists there, and they go through this experience. After a number of hours, the therapist will, you know, check in and talk to them about what the experience was and make sure they're ready to leave. But then we'll bring them back over the next few weeks for processing sessions to talk about their experience and try to help them translate some of their new perspective, their new ways about thinking about interacting with the world into actual behaviors that they can continue to engage in. So functionally, this would take hold and actually provide a sustainable change in their lives.
You know, it's probably difficult to describe this, and I know that everyone's brain works differently and everybody reacts differently to different, you know, amounts of, you know, yada, yada. But what kind of a dose are we talking about? You know, I mean, you hear a lot of people now, even in academic literature, talk about microdosing, which is very, very, very small amounts of psilocybin. And then, of course, you know, you have the people who talk about these massive psychedelic experiences. Where on the scale of that does a dose in this medicinal therapeutic setting, where does that fall?
Yeah, the part that interests me the most was that different types of doses are used in different studies, different strengths. There does not seem to be a direct correlation. So it doesn't appear that you need to have these really high doses of this hallucinogenic substance in order to have a meaningful clinical change.
Interesting. All right. So let's talk about the expansion a little bit. So this program had been available to veterans, but now first responders, EMTs, frontline healthcare workers. How do you think that treatment like this can help people in those professions? Why do you think those professions specifically were included in the expansion of the program?
One of the ideas, these are people who have traditionally not responded well to the treatments that are available.
Okay.
This population at times would have people that they might have debilitating psychiatric symptoms. These are people that are exposed to these very traumatic situations, and part of their psychiatric ramifications may be post-traumatic stress disorder. And the studies have shown that major depressive disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder appear to have really good response to this medication. The other thing is, you know, part of what happens with someone who has post-traumatic stress disorder and someone who has a refractory and unresponsive major depressive disorder and a number of other disorders is that, and I think you can just think of this sort of in layman's terms, is you get stuck in your head and you get stuck in a loop. And the loop might be, oh my gosh, I should have done more. I could have helped save that person. Or it could be, I can't get the image, you know, of the blood and the gore or the traffic accident or, you know, the confrontation with a lethal weapon out of my head. That could be for post-traumatic stress disorder. For depression, it could be, I'm terrible. I'm worthless. I serve no purpose. People are better off without me. And that's the loop that people can get stuck in, and they can't see the light of day. I have this this sculpture on my desk that my wife gave me, and I always refer back to it because it's so meaningful. And it's a stick person holding on to the bars of a cage, right? You might have seen this before, staring out. They're stuck in this bird cage. But if you look at the sculpture, behind them is the door, and it's wide open. But when people get stuck in their head, they get stuck in a term, you might hear more of this term in the future, the default mode network, is when you're not actively engaged with the outside world, you default to thoughts in your head, thinking about the past, thinking about the future, thinking about that lecture you just gave to the medical students, and was there a better point you could have made, and so forth and so forth. That's not pathological. But when you're thinking about how terrible you are, how the world would be better off without you, you'll never amount to anything, and that loop continues and continues and continues, that's major depressive disorder, and you want to break out of that. And what this medication appears to do, and it's been, when you look at the parts of the brain that are involved in this kind of thinking, this default mode network, it parts of it are quieted when you take this medication. And another thing that is seen with this functional imagery of the brain is that the brain not only relaxes these judgmental, introspective parts of the brain, but it starts to connect with other parts of the brain that don't usually communicate. And so you have this, and I talked about this with you last time, this opportunity, this neuroplasticity, this chance to wire things differently and perceive things differently. And this population seems to be most vulnerable to developing these types of problems. And
of course,
this medication appears to be very effective at directly addressing some of these loops that people get caught in that can destroy their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Now, last question, and it almost seems like a redundant one, but this is the sort of thing that would never be an at-home type of, like this would never turn into an SSRI where you just like take it every day. This is and always will be and is structured to be a therapeutic guided experience with medical professionals, right? We're never going to be able to buy psilocybin at CVS.
This is different than dosing on some mushrooms.
Certainly that as well. No, and let's please make that clear. Absolutely no, but I just know, of course, continue.
Right. The idea is that this is part of a treatment program. This is part of the healthcare system.
Yeah.
This is not something that you're going to buy at the gas station and take it and your life is going to change. You'll no longer be depressed. You'll no longer suffer from these ruminative anxiety loops in your brain and so forth. I could see that there might be ways to expand treatment, to be more creative with the guidelines, but we need the facts. We need the data first. Everyone uses telehealth these days. Will there someday be a way you could do this at home, connected to the healthcare system, maybe having someone at your side, but also someone else that's connected virtually?
Right.
There may be things we can do. Let's find out if it works.
There you go. And that's it right there. And I got, again, to bring up a point that you made earlier, and I work in a nice air-conditioned studio with a coffee machine right over here. So I'm fine. You know what I mean? But to your point, though, EMTs and, any emergency response people, anything like that, and, of course, veterans who have gone through these incredible, deeply traumatic experiences in some cases, and who are doing it for us, for the betterment of society. It's really incredible to me that there are new treatments outside of just the stuff that we've been using for the last 30, 50, whatever years, that can be researched and that can be effective.
I really like the point that you're making. Here we have first responders by definition, their job is to run towards the danger, and it's to help us. And here, we may have an opportunity to give back. So that's another reason why this population may be the perfect population to start with.
That's exactly it right there. Dr. Allen, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Jim.
Dr. Craig Allen from Hartford Healthcare, you are listening to The Download on the Voice of Connecticut, WICC.